Time to talk Apple computers and accessories now with Joe Rhodes, a self-employed Macintosh support specialist. He works in Madison. He's been supporting Macintosh professionally since 1999 and unprofessionally. Well, that's the wrong word to say. That really is. I mean, even before you were a professional, you were doing it very well for several years before.
Yeah, let's just say I wasn't getting paid at that point.
You were just doing it for fun. Now he gets paid to do it. But he also donates his time and comes and talks with you and me about our Apples and what's going on with those iPods and everything else. You can join in with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org, and we would be happy to get you online. Consumer Reports, by the way, we're talking about support.
Yeah.
Consumer Reports says that when it comes to solving problems, wait time on the phone, knowledge of the support staff, that Apple's tech support gets very high marks.
Yeah, I read that report, and it's very good to see because Apple really does put a lot of effort into that. They have not outsourced their tech support, so you're not calling a different country in a different time zone. And they've just... Generally speaking, they've gotten pretty good remarks, which is nice to see. Now, the flip side of that is they only give you 90 days of that for free.
Yeah.
But you have the option if you buy this package called AppleCare. When you buy your Mac, you can buy AppleCare, and it gives you several things. It gives you, number one, 3 years. You can call them for 3 years and ask them for help. And it also extends your warranty past the one-year period to 3 years. So you essentially get a three-year warranty on your Apple. You know, it's always a tough question, does someone buy that or not? Because ultimately, Apple has, you know, designed that whole thing so they make money on it. They're a company, and they're supposed to make money. But usually what I tell people is it's kind of like buying insurance. And the phone support, it's one of those things. Some people are really good at finding the answers to their own problems, and they can get online, and they can get to Google, and they can search, and they're willing to put the effort and really find the answers themselves. And for those people, I don't know if that's necessarily that phone support is that valuable. Some people aren't as good about finding those answers.
For the rest of us.
Yeah, yeah. Some people, it's just easier for them to talk to a human saying, my Mac is doing this. And for those people, that can be a pretty nice service, especially if you can't get into an Apple store.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, Sarah in Pell Lake has a question for you. Sarah, hello.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I have an iPod Nano second generation.
Okay.
And it runs. It sounds great. However, I cannot have, the computer doesn't recognize it when I plug it in. I've tried different USB cords. I've tried different USB holes. I've tried everything I can think of. I've tried different computers. No matter where you plug it into, it's not even recognized. You can pull up iTunes. There's nothing on there that says that the iPod is connected.
Hmm. Well, you know, you've knocked out a whole bunch of possibilities right off the bat because you said you've tried it on a couple of computers and no computer can see it. You've tried different cables and that doesn't seem to have any effect on it. You know, there's not many other options left than the Nano itself. I'm assuming you've tried to do a force reset of the Nano where I can't remember exactly which keys it is, but I know you can find it either in the owner's manual or Apple support where you hold down two keys and it will forcibly turn the thing completely off.
Yes, I've done that as well.
Yeah. You know, the only other thing I can think of off the top of my head, and I'm not a technician, so I can't say this for certain, but it sounds like the little connector on the bottom of the Nano, one of the pins might be broken, so it's not actually connecting when you plug it in. You might, if you're around an Apple store, see if they have any better luck, but I think you're going to find that it's... I mean, you pretty much nailed all the bases of stuff you got to check. I think you're going to find it might be the Nano itself.
Mm.
But the Apple Genius Bar, if you can get into a store, have them test it for sure, and they'll be able to tell you pretty quick.
Okay.
Okay, well, yeah. Thank you very much.
Sorry, didn't have a better answer.
Yeah, but that's probably the correct answer. Don and Holman, it's your turn next. Hi, Don.
Well, good morning.
Hi, morning. Don.
Say, listen, I have an Apple a Macintosh. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
But recently, when I get some photos mailed to me, like clouds, just along the edge of the clouds, there are 1,000,000,000 little blue dots that appear. And now I notice that when I click on to save part of an email or whatever and darken the background,
mm-hmm.
those blue dots are still there.
Now, if you say like this, I'm assuming this is a photo that someone sent you.
Yes.
And if you just sit, like you're looking at it in the mail application, I'm assuming.
Yep.
Okay. If you save that to your desktop and then double click on it, do you still see those little dots along the side?
That I couldn't tell you.
Okay. My first thought would be it might just be the way the mail application is showing you that picture. There's one of two things. Either that picture really has those dots, or it's just the way the mail application is displaying it. So if you could, and you can, when you have that picture showing in your mail application, just click on it and drag it over to the desktop.
Okay, but I notice anything with a dark background, I get these little dots. Not, it doesn't even have to be email. It can be almost anything.
Well, I'm not sure about that one, but my first thought is if you have a picture that's doing this, if you drag it over to your desktop, so it'll just turn into a little file sitting there on your desktop.
Okay.
And then try double-clicking on that and see if those little blue dots are still there. It'll probably open up in a program called Preview.
Okay.
What kind of Mac OS are you running? Are you running Mac OS 10,
I'm assuming?
Okay. So it'll probably open up in Preview and take a look and see if those dots are still there. Just out of curiosity, these pictures you're getting, are they all from the same person, or are you getting them from a variety of sources?
I have to say a variety of sources, but it was very profound on one set of pictures I got that was espousing great photography from National Geographic. And I went to send them to my daughters, and those blue dots were on there.
They were.
Yeah.
You got me stumped.
Wow. Right off the bat.
Right off the bat. Second call. I'm stumped.
Well, try at least drag it to the desktop and
see if you get the same thing in Preview. And then the other thought is if you could, I don't know if you have access to another computer that you can check your mail, but see if it shows up on a different computer with the same email.
Oh.
Because I wonder if I've never seen mail systematically destroy attachments. So I'm just wondering if it's something to do with the way your screen is showing that, or if it's the actual attachment. I mean, we could probably, if I had it in front of me, I could probably poke at it long enough and figure out what's going on, but it's a little hard to say over the radio.
Good luck, Don. Drag it and take a look and see what you find. And let's see, we've got Edmund next from Eota, Minnesota?
Correct.
Hi.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
What I'm asking about is there a kind of one of those computer books that he might recommend for someone that really doesn't know anything about computers? It would be similar to, I don't know if you may know this, but like computer friendly for PCs. But I was given a new Apple.
Okay.
And so that's what I'm looking for. Someone that really doesn't have much knowledge or experience.
Sure. Okay. Sure. Well, you know, the ones that I've seen that really kind of start out at a very basic level, there is that whole For Dummies books.
Yep.
And they've got, you know, I saw one that said Spirituality for Dummies, and I just kind of shook my head. It just scared me. But they do have Mac OS X for Dummies. And I can't say I've read through it very carefully because I'm not quite at that point. But my mom got it, and I paged through it. I'm like, you know, they really do start at some pretty basic stuff, like here's how a window works, and here's how you close a window, an open window, and here's how you move it around. So that probably would be a good place to start. If you can, though, go into a local bookstore. Like some of these, the larger ones anyways, they have a whole computer section. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if you can get to Amazon.com, you can usually read what other people had to say about it, see what their reviews are.
Oh,
but
okay.
If you can get to a bookstore and you can start paging through them and just pick a random chapter and see if the book is talking to you. Because sometimes you'll find a book that you're like, you know, they're talking about stuff and I have no idea what they're talking about. In other books, they have lots of illustrations and they're really... You know, they really feel like they're speaking to you and you'll really be able to get it. The other one that tends to be pretty good, and I think this might be a little bit more advanced, there's a book called Mac OS X, The Missing Manual. And that can be a pretty good one, but I think that they have an assumption that you have a basic level of computer knowledge to begin with. So if you can, take a peek at those and see if either one of those is talking to you and hitting the sweet spot of where you are right now with the knowledge you have and what you want to do.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Joe Rhodes, our guest. Give us a call if you have a question about your Apple computer or the accessories associated with them. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. What kinds of things are you, as you visit, I mean, you got, this is your business, what things most often come up for you?
Well, you know, it's a pretty wide range of stuff. I do a lot of work with design firms and ad agencies and things like that. So what I've been spending a lot of time doing, Adobe just came out with a new, what they call the Creative Suite. It's their package of Photoshop and Illustrator and their professional design tools. And so a lot of my clients have been moving from older versions to that. And some of my clients are moving from, you know, older versions of Mac OS X to Mac OS 10.5. And it's always fun for me to upgrade someone to newer versions, especially with Mac OS X, because you get to show them all these cool new tricks that it will do. And it never fails. They're like, oh, I can do that? That's really neat. And sometimes you stumble onto features that the old one could do, but they didn't even know. One of my favorites, there's this thing in Mac OS X since 10.3, 4, I don't remember, called Exposé. And if you press, it's usually F9 on your keyboard, and you have a bunch of windows open on your screen, it will magically shrink them all so you can see each one of them in its entirety.
Oh.
And so if you've got, say, 4 web browser windows open and a Word document open and an email window open, and you hit F9, and before they were all overlapped, well, now they're suddenly all out in plain sight, and you just click on the one you want, and it brings that one to the top. And it's one of those things if you don't know about it, you'd never think to use it. But once you see it and you see it in action, you remember it's there. It's a huge time saver. And yeah, a lot of people, you know, just little things like that. It's a lot of fun when I get to show that and put that on someone's desk.
Joe Rhodes, our guest today, and he'll be with us right up until 12:30 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking Apple computers and accessories now with Joe Rhodes, self-employed Macintosh support specialist, works out of Madison. Larry Mueller here, happy to have you listening in. Lots of callers online with questions, so I think we'll go right to the phones. Bob in Minong is up first. Bob, hi, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
What can we do for you?
I'm secretary of a golf league up here.
Uh-huh.
I try to send out statistics, but they cannot open my attachments. I've gone to edit attachments and come up with Microsoft friendly, but it still won't go through. Are the statistics too long? Is that a possibility?
Well, let me ask you this. When you're excuse me, before you try and email it, what program are you using to look at your statistics? What's the file?
Excel.
It's an Excel document. And how big are these Excel documents? Can you tell?
Oh, they're probably, well, they're 32 lines.
Okay, so yeah, so this isn't terribly
bad. It's not a long, no.
Yeah. And what operating system are you using? What are you using? Mac OS 10, 10.3, 10.4, 10.5?
10.4.
10.4. And when you send it to people, they say that it's garbled or that it's...
They cannot open it.
They can't open it.
Right.
Okay.
Now, one of the things I thought I had done in the past was add to the attachment either a PDF or a DOT.
Mm-hmm.
Is what they've commented on, but I've forgotten how to do that.
Okay. Well, there's a couple of things we can check. First off, do you know what version of Microsoft Office you're using?
Oh, not offhand, no.
Okay, because there's several versions out there for Mac. The oldest one that runs native in Mac OS X is called Office version 10. Then they had Office 2004, and now the most recent one is Office 2008. Do you remember if you've Office 2008 just came out in January. Do you know if you're using...
No, it's older than that.
Okay, it's older than that.
But I have had things updated, so...
Okay. Well, one thing you can do is when you're in Excel, they have, and I can't tell you exactly where this is, although I can probably bring it up, but there's a... one of the toolbars, there's a section for compatibility checker. And if you click on that, it will check. And I think even when you save your Excel document, I think it'll even have a little button there that says check compatibility. And you can test it against... different versions of Excel for, say, the PC platform. So you can test in Excel to make sure the document that it is saving is a valid Excel document. Now, failing all of this, if they just need to be able to see what you had in that spreadsheet, there's a pretty foolproof way around this, and you are right on track with that, and that's creating a PDF. Anything that you can print in Mac OS X, you can turn into a PDF, and it's pretty simple. You just go, you open up the document, you go to, like, you're going to print it, and you will see a button there that says PDF, and if you click on it, you can choose Save as PDF. And PDFs, the nice thing about PDFs is they work on pretty much any computer that can display a mouse. PDFs work pretty much all over the place. So if you can save it as a PDF and attach the PDF, they should definitely be able to open it.
Okay.
Now, is everybody having trouble with this this spreadsheet, or is it just one or two people that are having trouble with it? 'Cause
it's the majority of them. But what I had done, last year I was on the PDF, and then somehow I ran across this Microsoft Friendly, and I thought that would be a foolproof method, but it has created more problems than it solved.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry to hear about that, because usually Word and Excel documents email back and forth pretty well, but there must be just some little checkbox that we're missing somewhere in there. But, you know, the one thing you can try is that compatibility check inside of Excel when you go to save it and see if that helps any too.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Karen in Madison, your turn now. Hi, Karen.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have the main reason I am still using a 10-year-old G3, practically the only reason besides my laptop, is that it talks to my scanner, a SCSI scanner.
Mm-hmm.
And it's used for only one purpose, but recently the keyboard crashed. And the keyboard still has the kind of connector, not a USB connector, what was before that.
Right, the Apple Desktop Bus, or ADB.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, my first, I don't know if I can get the keyboard fixed, but the USB port was added subsequent to that, is an add-on to that computer, which is still on OS 9.
Okay.
And I'm wondering, my first question, since more USB keyboards are available, is if I get a USB keyboard, will OS 9 know what to do with it?
Yeah,
if
you know,
I plug it in?
That's a really good question, and I'm trying to remember because I know I've done this once, but it was some time ago. My impression is that, yes, the USB keyboard will work, however, with some limitations. USB, because it's added on to your particular Mac's model, and I think I know which Mac you're talking about because I think I had the same one. It's not supported natively by the hardware, so the USB doesn't come online until the computer is started up and loaded some software to run that card. So the downside of that is, let's say your computer doesn't start up properly, that USB keyboard that you would normally hold on the C key to boot from the CD-ROM or something else, that keyboard is going to be perfectly useless. So the first time that computer doesn't start up, that US keyboard isn't going to be of much help. And so for that situation, I think you'd be probably better off if you can scout around either on eBay or Craigslist and see if you can find an ADB keyboard. You might even try maybe a school if they've retired some computers, or you know, a business that you know uses some Macs, because believe me, every business I've been in, they have the closet in the back that has the miscellaneous parts. And I bet you they have one that they want to get rid of.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. John in Wausau, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a MacBook. It's 1 year old, running 10.4 point something or other.
Okay.
Was sitting at the table the other day, 2 days ago, and software update came up and said there's 4 security upgrades for the Mac.
Okay.
And that's fine. I take those usually. I downloaded them off of the Wi-Fi. I'm connecting to a computer upstairs, and it has a Verizon DSL modem with wireless on it.
Okay.
Downloaded all the software, installed it. Everything is peachy, except I can no longer access Wi-Fi.
Hmm.
And one of the updates was for Airport.
Okay.
It was a firmware update. My question is there anywhere to undo this, which I suspect there isn't? Am I going to have to buy a new Airport card for this?
Well, let me ask you this. You've got the there's no way that I'm aware of to undo a firmware update.
That's what I thought.
And I haven't seen too many occasions where that actually does too much damage.
Yeah.
Now, the airport menu up in the top of your screen, does it show that the airport is turned on or off?
Yep, it's on.
Okay. And does it show you the network that you're normally used to connecting to?
Yes.
Okay. And when you try and connect to that, what happens?
Error, can't connect.
Okay. You said you have the wireless upstairs and you're connecting to another computer.
Yeah.
Is it your DSL connection? Do you have a wireless router?
No.
Or
it's a Verizon modem.
Okay, so the modem is connected directly to another computer, and then that computer has a wireless card.
The modem itself has an antenna on it.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Okay. Just to make the thing odder, I took it into the shop I bought it from up here in Wausau, and it worked fine.
I was going to say, my first thought is...
It doesn't work at home, and it doesn't work at any other public site I've run across.
Oh, it doesn't work at any other public site.
Yeah.
Because my first thought is, I wonder
it's
if maybe...
the modem, yeah.
Maybe the modem needs a little kick, and if you could check with Verizon and see if they have an update for it.
Yeah, but I'm not sure that's the issue, because like I said, it happened immediately when the computer restarted.
Sure.
Which leads me to think the modem didn't choose to fail that second.
No.
Yeah, that would seem a little odd.
It seems a little odd to me. And like I said, we were at Marathon County Library yesterday...
And didn't work
after
either.
The shop said nothing's wrong with the computer, and I couldn't access there. There's a network diagnostics thing, and it said you're not connecting to the internet, even though I did have a signal. I mean, there's a signal strength thing shows up that there is a signal on their network, and like I said, I can't access mine at home either.
Yeah. Well, at the library, if it said you had signal. And it said it was connected to the network, but you couldn't get to the internet. That's actually a separate. There's a couple of steps involved there. First, you have to make the radio connection to the base station. Then the base station has to let you on.
Yeah.
And that's actually two separate steps. So, my first thought would be if you can try if you just tried the public library, see if you can try anywhere else or see if the
I will
and just verify that, because I don't know necessarily that wireless would have gone bad from that. It's possible. But the other thing is, if you can try, see if there is a firmware update for your DSL modem.
Yeah.
Because it may be, if it's a particularly old DSL modem, that maybe the...
Yeah, because the modem's 3 or 4 years old.
Yeah, they've been changing the specification for wireless internet. It keeps evolving. And so every time Apple issues a firmware update, they're basically getting back into compliance with the most recent specifications. And it might be that maybe they've stepped out of where your DSL modem was.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll try that.
All right, John. Good luck. And Judy in Green Bay is up next, I believe. Judy, hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have questions that may be actually AOL questions versus Mac questions. I inherited my son-in-law's old Mac, a G4 OS 10 3.9.
Okay.
And the two problems I'm having is with email, the default font and size, I don't know how to change those.
Okay.
And the second thing is, when we save to the desktop, they all stack up in the upper right-hand corner of the screen, and I can't move them around on the desktop physically. I can drag them to trash. Are these just things I don't know how to do, or are they AOL problems?
Well, you're using AOL to check your email, you said?
Yes.
Okay. I have to plead a little ignorance. I know very little about how AOL works. I last time I used it was, oh boy, I'm not going to say how long ago that was.
Long time.
It was a long time ago. However, I can give you a general idea of where you can look for some of these settings.
Okay, thank you.
When you're in America Online, and this actually goes for pretty much all applications, in Mac OS X, you have the little Apple at the very upper left-hand corner of your screen, and then right next to it, you have what the name of whatever application is running. So if you're running Safari, it'll say Safari. If you're running Microsoft Word, it'll say Word. If you're using AOL, it should say AOL. And if you click on that, nine times out of 10, there's an option there that says Preferences.
Okay.
And that's a good place to poke around and see if they will let you change the font and the size of the font and the style of the font for when you're reading email and different things throughout the program. A lot of applications will let you do that.
Okay.
So that's a good place to poke around and see if they offer. You probably find it under, you know, maybe email viewing or something. I have no idea what that window is going to look like, but hopefully they'll give you some breadcrumbs and kind of lead you to
it. Yeah. Good luck.
Okay.
And with the stuff on your desktop where it's piling up in one spot, what you want to do is click on your desktop so that the Finder is the utmost application. And then I believe if you go under the View menu, there should be an option there that says Clean Up Selection. And if you've clicked onto your desktop, it's going to try and clean up your desktop. And what that will basically do is it'll take all of the icons and try to arrange them in a somewhat reasonable fashion. So if they're all stacked on top of each other, it'll try and spread them out for you. And then you should be able to move them around as you see fit.
Thank you very much. That will make life a lot better.
All right, Judy. Thanks for calling. Derek in Madison, you're up. Thank you for calling, Derek. Hi.
Hey, I know you guys had a call earlier about the guy with seeing the blue dots around his pictures.
Yeah.
And I think I actually have the solution for that.
Oh, cool.
I don't think it's actually the email application, because he described it to be that he saw them when there was darkness, like when it was a dark picture or like around the dark parts, which sounds more like dead pixels. So that when it's a lighter color, the color comes through when it's lighter. But when it's darker, you see the dead pixel, which is a single light of like blue or something like that. So, and they all tend to cluster. So that's probably why he sees them around the same point.
Okay,
and I don't know if that's. I mean, that's just an idea.
That's a pretty good guess as far as we can go, because we haven't been able to see it. I thought he indicated that if he emailed these photos to his children, that they saw the same thing.
Oh, all right.
So I didn't think that was it, and I'm assuming that he's probably moved the window around, although I didn't ask him. But that's if it's always in the same part of the screen. Yeah, dead pixels are certainly It's LCDs are kind of a funny thing. They have about millions and millions and millions of tiny little dots that light up red, green, and blue to show whatever color they're supposed to in that particular dot. And what Derek is saying is if one of those pixels goes dead, maybe the red or the green dies, so all you see is the blue. The blue is the only one that lights up, and then you see this little this little string of blue that's on the same spot on the screen all the time. So thanks for the thought, though.
Yeah, thanks, Derek.
No problem.
Yeah, appreciate it. Mike in Oshkosh is up next. Hi, Mike.
Good afternoon. I've got two questions for our Apple Mac expert. I consider myself to be an expert in the PC area, and I have a friend who has an older Apple laptop who's been forced into getting a PC-compatible laptop.
Okay.
And he was running Microsoft Office for Apple or Mac, and he's complaining about having to retype all of his contact from his Outlook Express address book, and I said, I will bet that you can export that onto a floppy with your Apple and then import it into the new Vista, what do they call it, People or replacement for Outlook Express.
Sure. Yeah, I don't know exactly what that's called either. Outlook Express on the Mac, I'm assuming then this is a Mac old enough that he was probably using Mac OS 9?
And I can't help you with that.
That's okay. Outlook Express only ran in Mac OS 9. So if he's using Outlook Express, that's probably what it is.
Okay.
And if you go under the File menu in Outlook Express,
they'll have the same import-export features?
They have an export feature, and you can export it as a comma-separated value list. So it'll have first name, comma, last name, comma, address, comma, email address, comma, et cetera, and so on.
Okay.
Now, will Vista be able to work with that? I certainly would hope so.
I strongly believe so.
But at least you'll have something that you could, say, open up in an Excel spreadsheet, and at least you'd be able to copy-paste, although it still would be pretty laborious. But I would have a hunch that Microsoft would be able to work with that field, that file.
The import feature will work. Okay, then he's also got a list of club members in Claris for printing address labels and envelopes.
Okay.
And do you know if there is a probability that he'll be able to export that, say, to Word in a text delimiter or ASCII delimited format?
You know, I would certainly think so. Claris Works, you just gave me a clue of the age of this laptop, because Claris Works hasn't been around. They replaced it with Apple Works, and then Apple Works has been replaced by, the iWork.
Okay.
So if he's using Claris Works, we have an idea of roughly where this machine is age-wise.
But he said Claris, not necessarily Works.
Yeah, well, Claris is just that's what it came up as when you double click on the document.
Sure,
I would believe, but I can't say for certain, that there's probably a plain text export on that. There is, and I have no idea how you get a copy of it, but AppleWorks, which uses the same file format, AppleWorks did exist version 6 for Windows. Now, how you would get a copy of that, I have no idea. But if you could get AppleWorks 6 for Windows, you would, in theory, be able to just double-click those ClarisWorks documents, and they would open up in AppleWorks, and he'd be able to continue using them in a format that's pretty similar. The hard part is going to be finding that AppleWorks for Windows.
Maybe on eBay.
Yeah, it could be.
Could be.
Okay. All right. Thank you much.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Carol Ann in Cedar Grove, your turn. Hi.
Hi. I got a Mac for a gift.
You have some nice friends.
It has no programs in it at all, and I was wondering where I could go to find programs to start getting it going.
Sure. Would they give you a brand new Mac?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it should have come with some programs right off the bat. Apple includes programs like iTunes, iPhoto, iMovie, kind of things to do like digital pictures, digital movies, things like that. They include a mail application and an address book and a web browser, so you can get online right away. You can start sending and receiving email. Of course, you have to set all that up.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Okay, so you need some help getting all that stuff set up.
Yeah.
Okay. First, you have to get some internet access, which I'm assuming you've gotten or are probably shopping around for.
Where do I go to find that?
Oh, boy. That will come. You can get it from multiple places. If you have a local cable TV service, sometimes they offer internet. Otherwise, your phone company probably offers internet. If you're in a city, even of a small city, a lot of times they will offer high-speed internet over the phone lines.
Okay.
And it tends to be fairly inexpensive these days. I think you can get it for as little as like $15 to $20 a month.
Okay.
Which compares pretty much to what you had to pay when you had to dial up.
Okay.
So once you have that internet service, then you will have access to the internet. Now, your internet service provider will probably provide you with an email account, and you'll have to talk with them about exactly how you set up your email program with that email account. Because they'll have, you know, a particular setting, a username, a password, things like that. And they will either have documentation for you or you may have to call and help them with that.
Okay.
When you're calling around for internet service providers, ask them if they support Macs. Because some places will and other places won't.
Okay.
And if they do, that might be, you know, more advantageous for you, because then when you call and say, hi, I have a Mac, I need some help setting up my mail program, they should have someone there that knows what you're talking about.
Oh, okay.
Now, once you get all that stuff, that's all included with your Mac, so you don't have to go out and buy anything. But if you're interested in doing some other things, like maybe you want to make some documents or work with some spreadsheets or something like that, probably the thing I would start with, Apple has a suite of programs called iWork, and it's $80, so it's very competitively priced. And it's pretty easy to use. It lets you make, they've got templates where you can make, you know, newsletters and greeting cards. Or if you just start out with a blank template, you can just start typing and you know, write your the next great book that you're going to write. Pretty good program. And for $80, you know, really easy to use. Great place to start.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. And Pat in Minneapolis. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Great.
Hey, it's a great show. I wish we had this in Minneapolis.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, it's a different kind of question. And you mentioned that you run around to a lot of design firms and designers and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
My question is not about a problem with Mac, but when you talk to these people, what are some of the things they wish Mac provided them?
So a little philosophical question here, maybe.
Yeah, boy, that's a tough one, because they're usually not, they usually don't know what their computers do to begin with, and so they it's true. It's I don't even know all the things that an Apple will do. People are still teaching me things, and I'm surprised. I'm like, how did I not know that? So a lot of times the things that they're asking me for already exist. They just don't know how to get there. From a philosophical point, what are the things they kind of wish were there? Boy, I don't know. I have no idea. I guess I haven't paid that much attention to that one because I haven't fielded that question a whole lot.
Well, it's interesting.
New unit in the new year.
What's that? I'm sorry?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cross the talk over you. But I wish that... they had a little bit of a warranty program. For example, I had a monitor, I was having some problems with it. But I was at the Apple, the Genius Bar, and a woman next to me had a large monitor as well, one of the big oversized ones.
Uh-huh.
And hers, unfortunately, she tipped it over coming out of the box, and wrecks the screen.
Oh, no. Well, you know what? We're going to have to save the rest of that story for the next time because we're out of time. Pat, thanks for calling. Joe, thank you so much.
Hey, it was great to be here. Thank you.
Joe Rhodes, Macintosh support specialist in Madison. Always fun to have him with us. He'll be back, and we'll talk again. And tomorrow we'll take a look at the world of insects with Phil Pelletieri, our own Indiana Jones. Stay with us on the Ideas Net.